Vande ham Shri Guru Shri Atavpada Kamalam Shri Guru Navaishnavanscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Taitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha. Continuing, discussing the qualities and characteristics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as encaptured in his names in the Vishnu Sahasranama, the names of he who has no name. God has no name. His no name means he has many names. Does he have a name? No, he has many names. If you say a name, it suggests one name. So it's not ek, it's anek. Many, many names. So the first name today we'll discuss is Sakshi. Which means literally one who is with eyes. It means the witness. It's a common word in legal matters even today in India. Probably not in Tamil Nadu. It's a different word, it must be, but in other Indian languages, the word for witness. Hare Krishna. The word for witness is Sakshi. Sakshi means someone who has seen something, is cognizant of it, because many things we may see we're not cognizant of. Just like unless I drew your attention to it, you probably were not particularly cognizant of the building behind, although you're all seeing it, because your attention, I hope, is elsewhere. So a witness is someone who has seen something, has consciously recorded it, and is a reliable person to repeat or to describe to others what he has seen. And although witnessing generally means by the eyes, but there's also witness by the other senses also. Srila Prabhupada narrated that there was some court case came during the time of British India, where a British man was accused of insulting someone else. And the only person who else was present was called, was a Brahmin who was called as the witness. So he said, well, I don't understand the language he spoke in, but this is what he said. And he just repeated the words that the Englishman had said. Even though he didn't understand what it meant, he was able to recall the sound, due to having a good memory. That would be called an extraordinary memory. But Krishna, he is cognizant of everything. Please don't sit in the passageway, as others may come. Better move inside. So Krishna is the witness of everything, by seeing, by hearing, by tasting. He witnesses, just like you can't really say that some food is delicious unless you've tasted it. It's just theoretical knowledge. Sometimes we see something in a preparation, we say it looks delicious, then you taste it and supposed to be a sweet and they put salt instead. So it looks delicious, but it doesn't taste delicious. So witness means to have direct sensual perception of an event or an object. Krishna sees everything from at least two perspectives. He sees everything, well, a witness generally sees everything from outside. And of course our ability to see is limited, but Krishna, even though he's outside of everything and he's the overseer, maybe we have the idea is God is on high, he's sitting in the heavens, so how can he see what's down here? But we see that by the grace of God, some living beings have the power of eyesight, which to us is unimaginable, just like a hawk is flying in the sky, and he sees a mouse crawling in the field below and comes down immediately and catches him. Or we have been told that there are satellites put into space by the American military, which even this was many years ago, they were capable, there were optic sensors or whatever within that that were capable of from space, which means actually not very far away, but from inner space, they're able to read the writing on a coin that had fallen on a street in Moscow. So they have such ability to witness. So Krishna, if there's some machine can do that, then surely Krishna can see everything. And of course, just like I was saying, that we can witness, we may see this building behind us, but we don't really think about it. But Krishna is fully cognizant of everything. He doesn't have limited cognizance. Everything he sees with full perception. So he sees, we see from outside, he also sees from inside. As Antaryami, the indweller, he sees everything from inside. And a witness in a court case may say so-and-so did this action, but the court may also, the members of the court may also consider what is the motive of the person in doing so. That's often an important factor in deciding a court case. But Krishna sees all that also. He knows what is the motive of everyone as the indweller. So Krishna sees from all perspectives. He also, he is the one who gives the ability of sight, and he resides with the jiva within the body that the jiva is presently occupying. And it is by the grace of Krishna that the jiva can see, touch, taste, smell, feel anything. So Krishna is fully cognizant of the jiva's perceptions, motives, hopes. And so Krishna is not only seeing everything, but he also sees how others see. Just like I am seeing all of you and the background here. And Krishna is also cognizant of how I am seeing. So he's a super witness. This Srila Prabhupada recounted that when he was at school, a Christian teacher wanted to refute the understanding of karma, of reincarnation. And so he said, well, according to the theory of reincarnation, said the teacher, we get different bodies according to our previous activities. But who is the judge? Who is the witness? That's all gone in the past. But the answer, Srila Prabhupada would say, as he recounted many years later to his disciples, is that Vishnu, the Paramatma, is the witness and the judge. So this name, Sakshi, is very much, it's connected with the term Paramatma, which was just given, Putatma Paramatma cha. What comes after that? Avyayaha, Purusha, Avyayaha. Then Sakshi. So it's a name specifically for the Paramatma. There'll be other names later, like Keshava, Narasingha Vapu, which don't specifically refer to the Paramatma. And also it's a name of the Purusha, the word which just came, Purusha, Avyaya, Purusha. These names just came. Purusha, Avyaya. In Bhagavad Gita it's Avyaya, Purusha. So because Krishna is the witness from inside as the Paramatma, Kshirodakshai Vishnu, and from outside as Garbhadakshai Vishnu, he sees the whole universe, he witnesses the whole universe. And as Karanadakshai Vishnu, the first form of the Purush, he sees the whole universe. So these names are all connected. It's important to understand that there is a Sakshi, because we cannot get away with secret crimes. Sometimes we think we can get away with doing it. Let me go away and do something, and no one will see me doing it. But Paramatma sees. Even if the government doesn't catch you, and you're able to get away with a crime for your whole life, ultimately the supreme government will catch you. The long arm of the law, there's a saying in English. The long arm of the law has a very long arm, will reach you. But even if the long arm of the law doesn't reach you, then Krishna has a longer arm, the longest arm, and he will catch you. Actually, not even directly, through his representatives, who also act as Sakshi. Because everything we do is observed by the various devatas. All the devatas are present. Everywhere there's earth, water, fire, air, ether. And the devatas of those elements are also present. So they witness everything. The devata of day, the devata of night, of the directions, they see everything as representatives of the Supreme Lord. So this answers the objection of Srila Prabhupada's teacher that Karmana daiva netrena jantur deho bhupateya. According to our activities and under the daiva netra, the direction of the devas, which means the Supreme Lord and the various demigods, a person gets a new body. So this is mentioned in, I'm getting a little out of order here. Upadrashtanu manta cha. This is Krishna describes himself as the Upadrashta. Means he is the secondary seer or witness. The witness of everything as the super soul, the Paramatma in everyone's heart. Krishna is the seer. Upadrashta means he also sees. He's not. Why is he not called the primary seer? And why is the living being not called the secondary seer? Because Krishna is not very interested to see what the living beings are seeing, but he sees it anyway. And Anumanta, he allows things to happen. He allows certain things to happen. But he's not involved. In Gita also, Krishna describes himself as Sakshi, Gatir Bhata Prabhu Sakshi, Nivasa Sharanang Suhrit. So these are various terms by which Krishna describes himself. Gati means the ultimate goal, Bhartu means the husband, Prabhu means master, Sakshi means witness, Nivasa means the abode, Sharanam means the shelter, and Suhrit means friend. So we might get nervous if we think, well, someone's always watching me. And since George Orwell wrote a book of the name 1984, this term he coined has become part of the English language, Big Brother. Big Brother is watching you. There's the idea that wherever you go, whatever you do, there'll be cameras on you, and you can't go away, you can't be in privacy. People want their privacy so they can do all their nonsense in private. But Big Brother is watching you. I mean, it was not known from the text of 1984 whether Big Brother exists or doesn't exist, but anyway, someone's watching you. So this idea that the state is watching you and controlling you. People, especially in the democratic countries, they're of the West, the more sophisticated democracies, they're always trying to resist the government control of themselves and the government prying into your life. But such people may be distraught to know that everything we do is being witnessed at every moment, and there's no way we can escape from that. But the good news is that Big Brother Krishna is not just the witness, but he's also Suhrit in the same verse. He's our best friend. So he sees, just like the parents always have to watch a child. There's a certain age. We don't have many parents here. We have some. But there's a certain age when kids, they just start to, they get beyond the stage of crawling, and they have to be watched pretty much literally at every second. Otherwise, they'll kill themselves or smash something or cause some damage to something. They're at an age where they have curiosity and motion, but not much no discrimination about what they should do, what they shouldn't do, what they should touch, what they shouldn't touch. So they have to be watched all the time. And the mother does that, or between the mothers, they used to do it in the joint family. And in this way, the child is always watched, is always being witnessed. But that is with the benevolent concern of a parent, not the malefic control of the Big Brother type of George Orwell's imagination. What else? Oh yeah, another important point here is that Krishna directly sees. He's an independent seer. We are dependent on the organs of vision to see, which is defective. Our organs of vision, all of our organs are defective. And our understanding of what we see is also defective. And we're also dependent upon light to be able to see almost everything. We can also see things in our mind's eye, but that's not exactly witnessing. And we can, so we're dependent upon light to see, and we're also dependent upon the various demigods. The demigod of the sun also oversees vision. But Krishna is not dependent on anyone or anything. His organs he can see, not only with his eyes. Angani yasya sakalendriya vrittimanti pashanti panti kalyanti chirang jaganti. So Krishna is, there's no question of him not seeing at any point in time. And he can see because his transcendental body doesn't have the limitations of a material body. Therefore, Krishna, he directly sees everything. Another understanding is that Krishna sees everything, but he's aloof from everything at the same time. He's a reliable witness. If we again bring the court analogy, he's a reliable witness, not that he has to give evidence to anyone, but generally every witness will not simply see something, but he'll interpret that. Who is good, who is bad. And we ourselves, we tend to remember things the way we want to. Just like someone, if there's some argument has taken place between two people and different people have witnessed that, they may report it differently. If one is on the side of protagonist A, he may say, well, actually he was speaking very reasonably and it was the other one who instigated the fight, and the supporter of protagonist B will say, no, it wasn't like that. So they both saw the same thing, they're both bearing witness about it, and they have a different version. And that's very common, that police, they know this. Not in India, because witness means, what the witness says depends on who pays him the most. So it's not very reliable, but at least we can say in the West, police know this, that they can get to the scene of a crime or an accident maybe 5 or 10 minutes after it happened, and there are various witnesses, and they ask all the witnesses and they all say different things. It's very common. So Krishna is a completely reliable witness. The next name, Kshetragya, is a very important term which is similar to that of Sakshi. Kshetragya means the knower of the field. And just like every jiva is a witness, but the name witness here is a name for Vishnu, which suggests that he's not a witness in the same way that the jiva is, but he's a super witness. So similarly, the name Kshetragya is another name for the Paramatma within the heart of every living being. This name is a name for every jiva. Idam shariram kaunteya kshetragyam ityabhidhiyate. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that this body, or every body, every body, that's two words, not everybody, every body has the jiva who is within that body and who is the witness of that body. Everyone is cognizant of their own body. But there's another witness that, what is that? Sarva Kshetreshu Bharata. Kshetragyam chapi mang vidhi sarva kshetreshu bharata. Krishna says, there is another kshetragya. He is, he says, me. I, Krishna says, am the knower of all the bodies. So Krishna is the knower of the field. Here the kshetra means field, gya means knower. So Krishna, is Hindi translation going on? Yeah, okay. So Krishna, you see, I don't know. I'm not the Kshetragya. Krishna wouldn't have to ask that. Krishna wouldn't have to ask that question. He might do anyway. So Krishna, he knows all the fields because he is the Super Soul. The Paramam is one, although in many bodies he is one person. So, let's see what's written here. Yeah, so one who knows the body. So this means, to know the body means to be cognizant. So we are cognizant of our bodies, we feel heat and cold, sickness and health, pain and sensual pleasure. We perceive all this within our own body, and Krishna is aware of that in every body. Another meaning of Kshetragya is that because witnessing means to see, but knowing is more than simply perceiving. So to understand the principles by which this body exists and by which the jiva exists, that is the real meaning of Kshetragya. So Krishna also says in Bhagavad Gita, Kshetra Kshetragya Yogyanam Yattaj Gyanam Matang Mama, that knowledge of the field and the knower of the field, or in other words, in this context, the body and the knower of the body means the jiva who perceives via that body, within that body, knowledge of that is knowledge, Krishna says. So this point is the beginning of knowledge, to understand the difference between the body and the soul and the super soul, overseeing both. So this is the meaning of Kshetragya. It's also, so yes, that's also a name of the Paramatma, and by the grace of the Paramatma, in the course of my reading, I came across Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 20, Text 7, in which he describes nine qualities that distinguish the Paramatma from the Jiva and his body. So you see, there's Kshetra means the body, Kshetragya means the knower of the body, the Jiva, and Kshetragya also means the Paramatma, who is the knower of the body and the Jiva. So it's quite pertinent to read it during this description of the Paramatma. The nine differences by which one can understand the difference between the Paramatma and the Jiva and the body that the Jiva has, and also these nine differences also demonstrate the nine differences between the Jiva and his body. So the Paramatma, this is another meaning of Paramatma. Para means other or different. So the Paramatma here, para means supreme, but para means other or different from, and that ma can be used as an understood as an the English grammatical term is infix. Just like we have Parantapa, the name for Arjuna. Para means others, tapa means scorcher. So it means scorcher of one's enemies. So the na there is an infix. It's a consonant inserted just for ease of pronunciation. So it Paramatma can be understood like that also. So the Paramatma is different from the body and the jiva. So that's the first difference. So he's different. He's categorically different. He is one, whereas the jivas and their bodies are unlimited in number. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam yo vidithati kaman. The jiva is impure without knowledge and covered by the gunas, whereas the paramatma is pure with knowledge and without material gunas. Because he produces the gunas and is independent of them, he is called the shelter of the gunas. The jiva is not pervading everywhere since he has a material body and conforms to it. The jiva has limited ability to translate. And whatever he can translate is all by the mercy of the Paramatma also. But that's not part of Vishwanath's commentary. Let's get back to that. The jiva is covered by body, house, and other objects. The jiva is not the witness because he is often unconscious and has clouded vision. So that's another way in which the Vishnu is actually the sakshi, because the jiva, when he's asleep, he doesn't witness anything. Or he has clouded vision. The jiva is a small conscious entity dependent on Paramatma, whereas the Paramatma is the greatest conscious entity and independent of the jiva. Okay. Yes, the jiva is the sakshi of a limited field and Vishnu of all fields. Krishna says that to this knowledge of kshetra and kshetragya, I just quoted that, is knowledge. So this the subject matter of chapter 13, knowledge of the interactions of prakriti and purusha, this is a very it's an important topic. It's the subject of a whole chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which in that chapter the term purusha is mentioned several times. Some term, the name purusha, which just came here in the Vishnu Sahasranama. So this kshetragya, Vishnu as kshetragya, that brings together this understanding of him as kshetragya, brings together the conceptions of him as purusha in the sense of being the purusha avatars and sakshi. Now another because he's abhijna and swar, he's directly and indirectly conscious or knowledgeable of everything. Indirectly means he's directly conscious of everything. Indirectly means that this field is not really his field. He's not that much, it's not his field of concern. So another meaning of kshetragya means to know the field. Krishna is interested in the spiritual world. Krishna is the knower of the fields of Vrindavan, or the forests of Vrindavan, the spiritual world, which he knows and the jivas do not. So Krishna gives information of that field to us, of the field in which we really, the field we really need to go to, and the field where we really belong, and in the field in which we can personally interact with the kshetragya. No longer any need of sitting down and discussing Bhagavad Gita in the fields of Vrindavan. So one more name I'll go through today, and that will finish the second verse. And so akshara is the next word. It means not subject to decay. Imperishable, unalterable. Kshara, according to Monier Williams, means meltable. That which can melt. That means its basic constituency changes due to some outside intervention. But Krishna, he doesn't change due to outside intervention. As the Super Soul, he doesn't change. Of course, as Krishna, his heart melts. He's susceptible to change due to the loving exchanges of his devotees. But as Vishnu, he is akshara. He doesn't change. His position remains the same. He doesn't. He's not affected by the activities of this world. Namam karmani limpanti. Name karma phale spriha. He is not. Krishna is not affected by the activities that others perform within the field. The field means the body, can also mean the whole. The field of activities of the conditioned souls is the material world, which is karma kshetra, particularly human life, that is known as karma kshetra. It's a situation in which one acts and produces reactions. So Krishna is aloof from all this. He's upadrashtanu mantacha. He sees and he allows, but he's not involved and he's unchanging. Others change. They change their bodies. They change their attitudes. They change their moods. But as the Super Soul, Krishna is the perfect neutral judge. Completely neutral. So this name is very similar to, but not exactly the same as Avyayaha, which means can gradually deplete. And Akshara means not subject to decay. Another meaning of the term Akshara means A, which is the first letter in the alphabet, and Ksha, which means the last letter. So Krishna is the beginning of everything, the middle of everything, and the end of everything. But there's no end for Krishna. So there's... we tend to think of in terms of beginning, middle, and end. But actually it's all cyclical, as Dhrutakama Prabhu is presenting in various conferences. The Vedic understanding of time, which is actually... far more appealing to the intelligence than the idea that God or whatever suddenly did something. He had a whim and created everything and then threw most people into hell and brought a few to heaven, and then it all finishes and a blip in time. Or the scientific theory, scientific? Well, it's called scientific, that there was nothing. Now we are here, and in the end, close the curtains, never to open again. It's laughable, isn't it? Anyway, poor old scientists. Have to make a living somehow or other. So, Krishna is all that be, and nothing is beyond the scope of Krishna. Sarganam adir antascha madhyam chaivaham Arjuna. Of all creations, Krishna says, I am the beginning, the middle, and the end, which suggests there's more than one creation. So Krishna is everything. It's another way of Krishna saying that Krishna is everything. Okay, Hare Krishna, that's it. That's all I have to say. A lot more could be said about He who is everything. The beginning, the middle, and the end of everything. But I want my intelligence is not unlimited, believe it or not. I hereby declare to all of you who probably weren't aware of it that my intelligence is not unlimited. But as there's beginning and a middle and an end of everything, so this class was begun, has had the middle, and this, folks, is the end. Close the curtain and go and take prasadam. Hare Krishna. Any questions, comments, protests? No tomatoes, please. No tomatoes for this kind of class. Yeah.
If Krishna is not so much interested in what we do in this material world, is he interested in our bhakti yoga?
If Krishna is not much interested in what we do in this material world, well, he is. It's not that he's uninterested. I said that, but of course he comes again and again. Yada yada hi dharmasya glani bhavati bharata. He comes again and again in this world to help us. But his own personal interest is in the spiritual world. When I say he's not interested, it means he's interested to get us out of this mess. But he's not personally interested in enjoying it, because it's not very enjoyable. It's just like the, a decent citizen in a country may be concerned about the condition of the prisoners, but it's not that he's hankering to go to the prison and experience life in jail, because it's made to be unpleasant. So Krishna is interested, but not in the same way that we are. He's not trying to enjoy this world. Is he interested in our bhakti? Very much, because bhakti is a function of this of spiritual existence. So Krishna is very much interested in our bhakti. Akshara, one common meaning, or the best known meaning of among people in general, of the word akshara is syllable. Everything from a to ksha is a syllable. So that's already been explained as everything in existence from beginning to end. But it literally means syllable. And particularly the syllable Om, which is considered the primeval syllable from which all other sounds emanate. There's a great Vedic science of sound. So particularly the Om, that is called Akshara, Aksha. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna refers to that. Yadaksharam Veda Vido Vadanti, the syllable that the knowers of the Vedas know. So in this context, Akshara specifically means Omka. So Krishna is also Omka. Pranava Sarva Vedeshu. Krishna says that in all the Vedas he is Pranav. Pranav is another name for Om. Regarding Akshara, Arjuna asks Krishna about what is the meaning of several words, and in one of them is Akshara. And in reply, this is in Bhagavad Gita, of course, in reply, Krishna says, Aksharang Brahma Paramam. So Akshara means Param Brahma, the supreme reality. And Arjuna himself, shortly after that, will say to Krishna, Param Brahma Bhavan, you are that Param Brahma. So in this way, we also come to understand that Akshara is Krishna. Now, a literal meaning of Akshara is that which does not melt. Kshara means melting. So non-melting, non-meltable. Krishna as the Paramatma, the Super Soul in everyone's heart, sees everything, but he is aloof from everything. He's not, he doesn't partake in the happiness and distress of the conditioned souls. He's as a judge or a police officer, a dispenser of the law, has to be aloof from emotions and concerned with the application of the law. So otherwise, you see, if every time some criminal was brought into the court and they cried, and the judge said, the judge also started crying, then he wouldn't be a very good judge. The judge has to appear somewhat hard. Not hard, but neutral. Of course, the judge can take into account if he thinks that the tears of the accused person are not simply a show, and the person has some sincerity to reform, that the judge may take that into account. But the whole purpose of the judge is to dispense the law for the benefit of the whole society and of the person who is being judged, person or persons. So in this way, akshara, non-melting, he's sakshi, he's the witness and the judge. So he doesn't melt, he's not moved by any material emotions, doesn't get swept up in the flux and flow of this, the comings and goings of this material world. But he sees with the eye of eternity that people, some disaster, we may be very much disturbed by some disaster, but those who see with the eye of knowledge, they understand that it's an inevitable karmic reaction. These things happen again and again. Big war, so many people killed. There have been so many big wars in which so many people have been killed, and there will be in future. So this is the neutrality of the supersoul. He's not melted. He doesn't act on a whimsical or emotional platform in the discharge of justice. But on the other hand, he is also meltable. His heart can melt, but that is melted. His heart is melted by prem, by the love of his devotees. So those who are his devotees, even if they've been extremely sinful prior to taking devotional service, if they sincerely take to devotional service, then Krishna's heart melts. And all the laws which should have been applicable to that person, they are not taken into consideration. The example is there of a Jamil, who even a slight touch of feeling for Krishna in his calling out the name Narayana, because he remembered the Narayana who he had worshipped in his youth, or even because Krishna is so kind that even someone calls out inoffensively, maybe not lovingly, but without directly making offenses, Krishna is so lenient that his heart melts. So as Vishnu, he is Vishnu dealing with this material world, he does that. It's a function which he performs. So he's aloof. Upadrashtanu mantacha. He sees, he allows things to go on, but he's not personally or directly involved. But for the devotees, Mahatmanas Tumang Partha, Daiving Prakriti Mashrita. The devotees, they come directly under the supervision of Krishna's internal potency, who is Radharani, who is non-different from Krishna. And she, Srila Prabhupada writes, represents the compassionate nature of Krishna. So compassion is one of those horribly misunderstood words. People think that compassion means to improve people's material condition, which is just another way of prolonging their material condition. So it's not compassion at all. Yesterday when the Rath Yatra was stopped for some time, I happened to be standing next to some shop which had a picture of Shirdi Sai Baba, the face of Shirdi Sai Baba. I don't think there's any old depiction of him, but it's quite popular in this way. But there's a picture of him with his face oozing compassion. You've all seen these pictures. Like I say, I don't think there's any actual real picture of him or photo of him from the time when he lived, but they've made a caricature of him like that. So I was thinking, what it was just like, someone will go and they'll pray to Sai Baba and think that, oh, so compassionate, he cured my backache. And it's just ridiculous. What they think is compassion is a crime, actually. You're just prolonging one's material existence. So Bhagavan is actually compassionate, but it's very different to the imagined compassion that Sai Baba is imagined to have. So in that sense, he's unmeltable. As the dispenser of law, but he melts out of love toward himself. Then, as the maker of the laws, the sole dictator of everything, the maintainer of the laws, he can say that someone, even if they've been the most sinful, if they show even the slightest actual love for me, I'll immediately release them from everything. And no, people may protest, that's not fair, but we're all under the control of Bhagavan. So what's fair is what he says is fair. And you can't argue with that. You can if you like, but then you end up remaining in the material world. So there's some other understandings of Akshara. For Sakshi, one point I'd made, and there's Krishna as the witness, we can't get away with doing anything sinful. We think we're doing privately. No one will see me. We can't get away. There's a witness. But it works in another way too, a much more favorable way, that we might think that I'm doing all this devotional service and no one ever noticed, but Krishna sees. We're not performing it to show others how great we are or let everyone see how much service I've done. Even one may do very privately, unseen, but Krishna sees everything that we should be confident of. So there's another way. He sees the devotional service performed by his devotees, even if anyone else doesn't see. We should be confident that Krishna is witnessing everything that we are doing. Krishna knows. Or even if we're blamed for doing something that we didn't do, or we're blamed of having bad motives or whatever, we know that, well, ultimately Krishna knows. So the world may be against us, but Krishna knows who we are. There's a case in Chaitanya Leela of Gadadhar Pandit being blamed by all the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that why is he hobnobbing with this Vallabha Bhatta, who's an offender. But Gadadha, he didn't protest, he just accepted it. He said that, well, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knows what my intentions are, so what can I do? He wasn't of the type to protest to everyone. He was a very quiet type. So he just accepted everyone's blaming him. Of course, it's not to say that he was ousted from Vaishnav society. They weren't that extreme with him. He was, as long as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't throw anyone out, as he did sometimes, no one else would throw anyone out. But he tolerated all of that, knowing that, well, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he knows my heart. So, ya atman taryami purusha iti so syang savibhavaha. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the super soul within everyone's heart. Okay, you can stop.